This is Deanna Spingola. It is Wednesday, February 6, 2013, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guests today are Rodney Martin and Jim Condon Jr. Rodney is the director of Worldview Foundations. His website is wvfoundations.org. Jim Condon's websites are votefraud.org, hitlerdvd.com, and thefinalsolutiontoadolfhitler.com. He is the producer of The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler, which he created in, what year did you create that, Jim?
We did that in 2003, so believe it or not, it's almost a decade old.
Yeah, okay.
I can't believe it, but anyway.
All righty. Okay, Jim, go ahead, and why don't you go first, and if you wanted to add anything to what I've already said about you, that go ahead.
In fact, those two websites, hitlerdvd.com and The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler, are actually the same website. And we have another one called realnews247.com. If I have any little claim to fame on the Internet, it's for fighting vote fraud, computer vote fraud. We've been opposed to secret computer vote counts since 1979. And right now, if you watch what's happening on the major networks, if somebody, the NRA, somebody with a microphone doesn't challenge these secret vote counts, we are going to lose everything at these, quote, elections, unquote. We had the first website up on the Internet on opposing secret computer counts in 1996. And I guess the other thing that I've become a little bit known for is this research. It was actually the research 80%, 90% done by Dr. Paul Rusnowski, who has passed away now. He's a MD and a anesthesiologist. He passed away in day before Easter 2009. And anyway, he called me up, and when he first told me this research, I thought he had gone off the deep end. But then when I looked into it, I found out that it did raise a lot of questions. And so we put out the DVD. We said in the DVD that we were mainly trying to provide people with a lot of sources, and even if they didn't agree with our interpretation of the sources, that at least they would have them to start with. And we tried to bring forth sources from establishment books and some obscure sources. Some of them are though from establishment books where they mention things and give them what we feel is an obviously inadequate or absurd explanation. So we pulled all those things together, and that became, you know, the what was originally called The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler, then was called The Nazi Zionist Connection. At the suggestion of one of my person who was excuse me, very astute in the movement, and within a month of us renaming it, PayPal forbid us to sell it anymore once we named it the Nazi Zionist Connection. So that's maybe of some interest to some people. And they've never given an explanation. They wanted me to sign a form that I violated their terms. I said how. They never would say, so I never signed it, and so we can't sell it on PayPal. We're using PayPal. So anyway, so that's just I'm 59 years old, married in 1978. We have six kids who are now all 21 to 33, and I ran a T-shirt business when I got out of college, graduated from Xavier University, HAB, Honors Bachelor of Art program, taking anything you couldn't make a living with, like history, philosophy, Latin, Greek. Then I ran a printing business for 15 years where we were probably the last small company to get a contract with people like Johnny Bench and Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, 75, 76. Sold that in 89, and have been in part anyway working in political work and, you know, this type of work ever since. So anyway.
All righty. Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
Rodney, give us some of your background and what you do. And
my website is www.wvfoundations.org, and I've had several emails recently asking about why we call it WV Foundations, Worldview Foundations. And when I'm on your program next week, Dan, I'm actually going to answer that question. But more about myself, my wife and I have been married for 18 years. We have five children. We homeschool them because we believe our children are our children and our posterity. They are not products and property of the state. So they receive a very well-balanced and accurate education, and that's one of the reasons why we founded Worldview Foundations, is we're dedicated to historical and cultural accuracy and intellectual honesty. We do a lot of original source research. One of the programs that we're very proud of is our oral history program, where we go out and we interview what I call citizens of the Third Reich, who lived during the Third Reich period, in an attempt to show what real life was, everyday life was during the Third Reich, and to debunk a lot of the Hollyweird and Jewish stereotypes that has been perpetrated on the public and has resulted in a great amount of brainwashing. We also have engaged in some publishing. We do essays. We invite guest works to submit as well. We're basically dedicated to historical accuracy, and I like the word accuracy more so than anything. We like to correct the record. We've done things such as ride to PBS to correct one of their documentaries where they perpetuated a Jesse Owens, hit the snub of Jesse Owens, which was completely inaccurate. We did official correspondence there to PBS and one of their quote-unquote American Experience documentaries. So we're very active. We've also contacted consulates regarding the desecration of German war graves. And I'm really pleased about doing this program this evening. It came to, I'm familiar with Mr. Condit. I'm familiar with his DVD. I've heard him on some other radio programs. And recently some of Worldview Foundation's listeners and readers have asked that I get in touch with him and do a what we would call a debate and discussion that is based solely on the academic and intellectual merit, not a shouting match, nothing of that sort, but basically discuss sources, discuss the key events that Mr. Condit uses to substantiate his theory and his conclusions, and then let the listeners decide. It is possible for individuals that have, differing opinions and differing interpretations of history to come together and have a rational debate. I just happen to think that some of Mr. Condit's conclusions are inaccurate, and hopefully tonight we can have a very thought-provoking discussion and have a lot of fun doing it.
Indeed. I think it will be very enjoyable, and I have been looking forward to it also. It's my recommendation that you bring up the particular question, and I believe you have kind of an outline. I'm looking at the outline that I used previously, so we can perhaps ask a question and then give each person 5 minutes to respond to the question. How does that sound?
So let me understand. Who's going to ask the question again?
I can ask a question and then give each of you 5 minutes to respond.
Okay.
How's that?
That's fine. I mean, any way you want to do it is fine, yeah.
Okay. The first question was, and it's always a question that seems to come up, was who was Hitler? Was he part Jewish? What's his lineage? So let's do that question first. And Jim, why don't we take you? And I have an atomic clock here, and when you.
Yeah, the only thing is it okay for us to talk back and forth as well? Or that seems to me to be a little more of a free-flowing, chain of ideas than if we just are both, like, in the presidential debate stuck to...
Okay. What do you think, Rodney?
Well, I think based on what I, and I've had several offline and phone conversations with Jim and I, from what I understand, there's some what I would consider, I guess, three or four primary elements of his, what I would call his hypothesis, where I'll call that. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I would, from my point of view of what he has presented as DVD, is one that, and I'll use a quotation, Hitler had Jewish lineage and was trying to make his way in the world. And then flowing from that, there was some issues with regard to the funding of the NSDAP and how the NSDAP was funded. And then there's some sources and some examples. And Jim does have sources and examples that he utilizes. And I'd like to have the opportunity to engage in a dialogue and talk about those, both the sources and the examples, the events, the actual events of the time. Because
okay.
We're talking about what I consider, and a lot of people do this in history, when they think Hitler and Germany, they only think about during the war. There's actually three time periods. There's Hitler and the, you know, the rise to power. Then there's actually the six and a half years of peacetime Germany, 1933, 1939. Then there's the war. And I think each of those periods were unique and had unique circumstances, and it resulted in some evolution in thought and in policy. And so I think probably one of the issues, and it's always, I tell you, the emails I received, Deanna, from a lot of my listeners is they want to, you know, they want to address that, you know, was Hitler part, you know, was Hitler Jewish? Did he have Jewish lineage? And Jim certainly has some sources, and I did some research too on some of those sources, and I think it might be fruitful to put that one to rest, and then, because from that we could probably address some of the other, from my point of view, some of the other.
Well,
issues.
And Rodney and Deanna, if you don't like the way I'm proceeding, just tell me, and we can, you know, we can adjust that. But before I will address that, the first question you brought up, I want to address it. I just wanted to ask, do you mind if I call you Rodney, and you can call me Jim?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask one question, and that is before I gave my thing to Rodney, and that is, are you sure of who Hitler's father was? Would you say, and incidentally, let me concede to you that I would definitely agree that we have a thesis, we have an investigation that we're trying to undertake and urge others to undertake. For instance, on this question, you may know that the communists, when they took over Russia, there was such a long list of that this was just a Jewish front group, communism, and Robert Wilton and Father Dennis Fahey and the U.S. Secret Service, so many people published things that said, you know, like 90% of the people that took over Russia were Jewish, okay? And then, but from 1917 till 1991, if anyone suggested that Lenin was Jewish, part Jewish, then you were shouted down. You were shouted down. It was like, you anti-Semite, bigot, everybody wasn't Jewish. Well, in 1991, the Jewish papers, and I can't remember which one right now, was Jewish Forward, a very prominent paper coming out of Israel, said, well, actually, yeah, Lenin was one-fourth Jewish on his grandfather's side, and now, last year, they put it on his tomb. So I believe that will eventually, they'll eventually admit that 40 or 50 years from now, or whenever the Nazi thing is over, the use of the Nazi thing is over, if they get that far, which I don't think they're going to get that far. I believe I just want the audience to know, I have a firm opinion that they will do that. They will eventually admit Hitler was part Jewish, and they'll even pull back a lot of this information that is definitely not known to the general public, even though it's known to people who are interested in the subject now. So, if I could, and you know, if you don't want to answer anything, it's okay. Before you give your presentation, would you say that you're 100% sure of who Hitler's father was from your research?
Hitler's father?
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase the question because I asked it wrong. Who is Hitler's grandfather on his father's side? That's what I meant to ask.
Oh, I don't think that's as mysterious as people have been led to believe. But, and I think if I was a betting man and engaged in gambling, which I would not. I would definitely concur with the documentation that was actually done and that was started in 1935, 1936. It's not a secret, and this is one of the biggest problems and distortions about the Third Reich, is that Adolf Hitler refused to have anything done about his lineage, when in fact there's a document a huge document on his specific lineage that's available. You have to translate it in Leipzig, and it was done in Leipzig, and it concluded that it all went back to Hitler, and the Jewish person, you know, the Jewish, you know, the where this came from, this argumentation that there was this affair with a Jew by his grandmother has been so delegitimized just by doing two things: one, running the chronology, and doing, you know, the basic records. You know, the individual wasn't you know, the individuals weren't there, and at the time of the
no.
But I guess we can get into that. But if I can ask, you know, Frankenberger. I mean that your position is that Frankenberger was his grandfather, and
Not exactly, but let me just ask though. We would both agree we're 100% sure there was a battle at Dunkirk. Okay, we know that for 100%. I'm asking you if you feel are 100% sure that Hitler's father's father was, his grandfather on his dad's side.
I would say 100. I am 100% sure that Hitler was not Jewish. I am 100% sure that Hitler's father was one of the two brothers, and ultimately something was a determining factor that documented which Hitler that it was. And actually, you know, the records and if you run the chronology, you know, who was where, and in Germany and in Austria and in those places at the time, you had to register your presence.
Right.
That is actually a better example and better proof. That's why I would say I'm 100% accurate and sane.
So then you
think one that it will be that it, proof is that Adolf that Hitler was Adolf Hitler's grandfather. A Hitler was. And that there will not be a proclamation from anyone in any sort of authority on the same plane as the Lenin proclamation, because Lenin, it was absolutely accurate. In fact, the Lenin Jewish lineage has been known for quite some time. I mean, that wasn't any great secret. It was even known during the Soviet times that he was quite Jewish.
But if I can ask.
What leads you to believe, and we can work backwards from the chronology and the documents, and what are your sources, and then we can actually get at sources, because I prepare for these things, and I know you're prepared with your sources. What are your sources in chronology for establishing that Frankenberger would be his grandfather?
Well, first of all, as you're kind of hedging your bet on which of the uncles or which of the uncles of the Heidlers was the father, which is fair enough, because I've read that stuff, and you know, it was hard to determine from that point of view, even if it were true, and if it is true, who was the actual father between the uncles, or if I remembered right. Now, I have come to believe that the Frankenberger thing is a false lead to move people off of the investigation that Hitler was a Rothschild. That according to the word of mouth, because Dollfuss was the head of the Austrian government when Hitler came into the public view as somewhat of a shooting star. Now, you can say, and it's true, that he was known to the Nazi party in the 20s and an ever-widening group of Germans, but he really burst on the stage like a shooting star in 1933 when he was elected chancellor, as far as I can tell. So Dollfuss, who was head of Austria, and many, Bridget Hayman in Vienna's Hitler records that many little German newspapers in little towns around Germany said, who is this guy? And a number of them said, raised the question of whether he was part Jewish. Now, somebody, just a good friend of mine, actually just attacked this, what I just said, without naming me, in the American Free Press. And they said that I was claiming that Bridget Hyman in Vienna's Hitler was claiming that Hitler was Jewish. In fact, no, she was trying to say he was not Jewish. And I don't know if Bridget Hayman is Jewish or not. I kind of imagine she is from the way she covered it. All I was saying is that she was noting the historical reality that all the many little papers in Germany and others were saying, who was Hitler, where did he come from, and what and whether, and some of them raised the issue of whether he was part Jewish. A cookbook was produced then by a Rosalie Hitler. There were Hitler gravestones in the Jewish graveyards, and these were some of the things that were said. Now, the Austrian guy Dollfuss, the leader of Austria, was assassinated by the Nazis in about 1935, after the Austrian government did this investigation. And as far as I know, the documents that constituted that investigation were then destroyed or stolen or whatever. They've never been, no one can put their hands on them today. But the word of mouth coming down, and what is covered, I believe, in the Gardener wrote it. The name's escaping me. I think it's called Hitler, The Last of the Hitlers, Gardener, is that the Austrian government said that their research, and a government has a lot of resources at its command, their resources showed that Schnickelgruber, Hitler's grandmother, was working, and of course they kept very good records in those days. Again, I will admit this is not a proven thing. I just want to be clear what's proven and what's not proven. But the word of mouth coming down from that Austrian document is that Hitler's grandmother was a maid in the Rothschilds' house at the time that she became pregnant. And then in my mind, world Jewry, to keep people away from this idea or anything like it, they've made up this banker Frankenberger, and then they say, oh, nobody named Frankenberger existed in the town where Schnickelgrubers were from. Well, okay, fine, but the point that is what I think where the investigation would have to go. Now, the other source, other sources of that are Hans Frank, who was Hitler's lawyer, and my understanding was a half-Jewish lawyer. Now, some people are challenging that. But he was sent by Hitler down into Austria by his own writing to check out Hitler's ancestry. And I find that to be extremely odd. In other words, I don't have to send anybody down to any courthouse or anything to check out my ancestry. Why do we have so many of these prominent people, their grandfather or something is a mystery. Bill Clinton is one. Barack Obama, of course, is legendary now for nobody being able to figure out his lineage in any kind of a certain way. Bismarck, his father was unknown. There is a Mao Zedong is said to be half Jewish. In other words, there's a history of Jews running around and impregnating the local women and watching the offspring and helping the offspring who are talented. And so is this the case with Hitler? I'm not 100% sure, but I'm going to go through just a few other things if we have time, and then turn the floor over to Rodney. But I want to say that what we say is this, that Hitler was cooperating with the Zionists in many ways is beyond a reasonable doubt if we were in a courtroom. People can put different motives on it, but that's beyond a reasonable doubt. Hitler's ancestry, that he is a Rothschild and part Jewish, the preponderance of the evidence points there. We don't say it's proven because it isn't, but we say the preponderance of the evidence points there. Now, so Hans Frank, after he went down and did this investigation, and then Hitler, when he went into Austria, destroyed the graveyards where it made them into marching battlegrounds. And so Hans Frank, when Hitler was out off the scene, he said that he did find credible evidence that Hitler could be part Jewish. Now, he was Hitler's lawyer. This was at Nuremberg. Some people say that the priest, whose name escapes me right now, seemed to have an Irish name, intimidated Hans Frank to say this. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, but Hans Frank did write in I believe it's in the pamphlet called In the Face of the Gallows. There might be another name to it for it too, but it's in a pamphlet called The Face of the Gallows. And then we have let's see, I had one other thing I wanted to bring into this. which is escaping me right this second. Hitler didn't. The source of William Patrick Hitler, which is also in the last of the Hitlers, who one of Hitler's relatives went to Ireland, married an Irish woman, and then William Patrick Hitler went back to Germany and was a thorn in the side of Hitler. And Hitler, according to Gardner, on an interview with Paul Ozon and with Judith Regan, who used to have a Saturday Night Show on Fox News, said that Hitler paid William Patrick Hitler, his nephew, the equivalent of $250,000 in today's money, to quit doing interviews and shut up about the ancestry. William Patrick Hitler tells of a meeting he had with his uncle where Hitler was screaming, crying, saying, "Why are you bringing up my ancestry? I'm only from the folk. I did not mention any of this in my writings, and I'm not to be my ancestry is not to be looked into." And I'm interested to hear if you are going to feel that these sources, which are in various books, are all false. But the question is, why is there so much all of the scuttlebutt around Hitler, Eichmann, Heydrich, which I have some facts on here because somebody's challenged the idea that he was Jewish. All the scuttlebutt is that they are part Jewish, and not that they're part Polish, not that they're part Russian, but that they're part Jewish. And when you look at the overall thing is, and then I'll turn the floor over here. Here's the thing. If you're running a deception, certain things have to look good. And maybe all the parties aren't totally in on the general thing that's being run, but you can't just bring up the good rhetoric and the good things that someone does if someone else is accusing that they're doing a part of an international scheme or a scam, a deception on the German people, that Hitler was involved, we're saying, in much bigger deals than the German people were ever led on to. And an analogy to that would be the current takeover of the Vatican. These last five popes, who my faction calls anti-popes, there's whole papers, there's a whole cable network named EWTN. You've probably all run across it, Eternal Word Network. They put all kinds of happy talk out of what John Paul II and Benedict XVI are doing. You watch that channel, you'll think, gee, these are great guys. But they're hiding a whole bunch of information that reveal that these are operatives of the Rothschilds of the New World Order. And this is the same what I'm saying is happening here, that there's a whole bunch of information that screams that Hitler was part of some bigger deal, and that's what we're here to talk about, of course. Although I want to quickly say one last sentence. We are not trying to diagnose Hitler's mentality in every month and every day. He may not have liked what was going on. He tried to stop World War II when it was getting started. I don't think he liked what was going on, and he didn't want to be shuffled off the world stage like he was. But we're not trying to diagnose his frame of mind at every moment. We're just saying the evidence, without this evidence that we're going to talk about tonight, you have to leave whole parts of World War II sitting by the side of the road and say, I just don't understand them. So, okay, sorry to go on so long, but go ahead then, Rodney.
Well, Jim covered a lot of items, and I guess, you know, if I was to get into legalese, you would call it a lot of circumstantial evidence, but I'd like to address some of the three key points.
Sure.
One,
and I agree with you. It is circumstantial evidence.
Let me stipulate, there's nothing wrong with circumstantial evidence because sometimes it does build to a conclusion. But another approach and address some main issues here that you brought up, namely one you mentioned that Dollfuss, who became the chancellor and then of Austria and then essentially put in place a dictatorship in Austria and banned all political parties, not just Austrian Nazi Party, he banned all parties. You mentioned that in 1935 he had done this study, and that study had disappeared. And somewhere, I'm assuming that is documented somewhere in your sources. The problem is Dollfuss could not have commissioned any study in 1935 because he was dead in July of 1934. So whoever wrote that obviously didn't get their chronology right, because Dollfuss was assassinated, you know, by the local Austrian party in July of 1934, And, of course, some people would probably jump and say, well, Hitler instigated that. And, in fact, I previously discussed that in some other radio programs. And, you know that was internally driven than anything else. We can get into that later. But so I'm a little confused as to how a dead Dolphus could have conducted a year after he died.
Yeah, I'll wait to – I'll let you continue, but I'll mark these down and address them. I said he was assassinated in 1935, not that the study was concluded in 1935.
No,
anyway,
Dolphus was assassinated in July of 1934.
Okay.
And even if, I'll go further on the Austrian issue, the Austrians, you know, I'm trying to understand under what, and again, you yourself had mentioned that this was a word, you always know is what's in the report by word of mouth. I would be very, very hesitant to consider anything that's word of mouth saying, well, I read this in a report somewhere, well, let me see the report, especially when it was supposedly commissioned by a man in 1935 that had been dead a year prior. So,
no, but I didn't say that. I didn't say he commissioned it in 1935.
Jim?
Understand the pretext also. Why, you know, we don't have this report. All we have is word of mouth that a report was done by the Austrian government. And I have, you know, considering your sources, I went looking for anything. I went looking in the Austrian archives. I went looking for, you know, anything ordering this, any sort of report. And then I start to thinking, and believe it or not, my better half brought it up, saying, you know, why would the Austrians at that particular time in 1934, 35, just say the date was wrong? Let's stipulate that maybe the date was wrong. This report was done in 1934 rather than 1935. You know, the Austrians and the Germans, you know, there wasn't any problem. As a matter of fact, Dolphus actually had a benefactor to his south by the name of Benito Mussolini at that time, who had guaranteed, you know, was a strong supporter of Dolphus. So I'm not understanding why the Chancellor Dolphus, if he did, had any need to dig up the lineage of one Adolf Hitler. I don't know how we can consider word of mouth saying I heard about a report. If we were to go around doing that, I think it's laughable, and I don't think we want to engage in any sort of intellectually honest debate based on or write. We certainly couldn't use it as a footnote in any sort of credible publication saying, well, I'm basing this on a hearsay. I heard there was a report out there. It's not credible. I'm just not thinking that that's credible. Getting back to the lineage issue, there has been this absolute farce and fallacy that for some reason Adolf Hitler forbid any sort of review or publication or of his lineage, but yet it was done in 1937. And was readily available. And this was started, believe it or not, in 1935, this documentation. And it goes back, and I'll scan it and put it in PDF form on my website. I guess I have a translated version. It reads much like an Excel spreadsheet. So I'm just a little hesitant to use Dolphus. Now, you mentioned William Patrick Hitler, which was his half-brother's son, and he bobbed back and forth. And like any, and I think in a way I can relate to this because I have relatives this way. You know, one minute you have a relative that's in your good graces as long as you can give them something or are willing to give them something, and then when you say, forget it, you know, this relative is an idiot, then of course there's going to be all sorts of, you know, make you, you know, look bad. Now, bear in mind, the world media had it out for Hitler to begin with, and all they needed was some idiot relative who happened to share his last name making up a bunch of salacious, you know, accusations. Does it surprise me that Hitler may have given him money to just not, you know, to basically buy his peace and to leave him alone? I will stipulate that Hitler gave William Patrick Hitler money and whatever to, you know, leave him alone and to buzz off. Where this argument that William Patrick Hitler had evidence of Jewish ancestry seems to be to fall, you know, into the meritless claim is the war was over in 1945, and he lived quietly in New York until his death, I believe, in the 1980s, and I could be wrong, he lived to be to a ripe old age. And never once did he stand up and say, oh, by the way, the Hitlers are Jewish. And yet every opportunity, particularly, you know, after the 1970s, when all of the children of National Socialists, you know, the offspring, some of the offsprings of some of the National Socialist leaders, Hans Frank, one of his sons, is notorious for giving salacious interviews in the German media to this day, just trashing his father. So I'm not convinced that William Patrick Hitler, you know, was blackmailing Hitler with any sort of Jewish lineage, because there just doesn't seem to be anything there to substantiate that other than pure speculation. We all like, it's an American thing. We all like when, you know, who has the family secrets? Oh, well, his uncle gave him some money to hush him up. Well, he ran across the United States, to the United States, wrote a letter to FDR, served in the United States Navy, and then lived quietly ever after and never, you know, had his chance. When the war was over, he could have really danced on his uncle's grave and said, ha, 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 see, you know, and he never did do it. So I'm kind of curious as to why, if that was the case, if that was true, why he didn't do that. And now let's talk about Hans Frank, because I was always intrigued with Hans Frank. He was a long time friend of Adolf Hitler's, but he cracked in Nuremberg, and there are records available. The prisoners in Nuremberg were subjected to horrendous treatment. There was one, maybe two suicides in Nuremberg. But if you read the totality of Frank's statements, even the most anti-Hitler critic finds them to be not credible. Because in one of his statements, he mentioned, he referenced that he based some of his assertions because of the stories Hitler's grandmother had told him, meaning Hitler's grandmother had told him stories to Hitler. The problem with that is Adolf Hitler's father was in his later years when Hitler was born. I think he was like 30 years older than his mother. And Hitler could not have heard any stories from his grandmother because his grandmother was dead many years before Hitler himself was born. Again, the chronology, what I'm basing some of my statements on and looking at these sources and looking at this thesis is, one, look at original sources, original documents, and then look at the chronology, and then look at where people were at certain times and where they weren't. And then in the case of Hans Frank, he cracked in Nuremberg. He just literally went insane. And he has two sons that are still alive today. One of them is basically a nut job that likes to write trashing articles about him. And the other son remained rather loyal. And you can look up on Der Spiegel and DW Journal and some of the German press. As bad as it is, and see the interviews of these two Frank sons, and the other son readily admits that his father, Hans Frank, cracked in Nuremberg and went off the deep end. And it's not hard to imagine when you were subjected to the type of absolute torture by Jews and, you know, by so-called Americans, you know, with Jewish last names and U.S. Army uniforms, that these men were subjected to. Now contrast the conduct of Hans Frank with that of Wilhelm Frick, who was also an attorney and was the Interior Ministry, who had, you know, and Alfred Rosenberg. All three of those men had long-time ties with Hitler, and it was only Hans Frank, after he cracked and can make the case, became mentally imbalanced, and made statements that completely cannot be corroborated, that are fanciful, that are absolutely wrong, that are zeroed in on, whereas, you know, Wilhelm Frick and Rosenberg, two of his longtime, you know, old time comrades going back to the founding, you know, the beginning of the party in 1919, you don't see any of their statements being anywhere out of character. So I think on those three things, I'll kick it back over to Jim, and we can keep going on.
All righty. Do you think that we should put this question to rest and maybe go on with other things? Because we could spend a whole 2 hours just talking about that.
Yeah, let me summarize my position, and maybe Jim can do that unless he wants to go on. But
you do that. But I would like to go back and forth with some questions between us on this, because that would be the most useful way for us to get to the bottom of some of these things, I think. But go ahead. Yeah.
Well, to summarize my position is, I have actually looked. I didn't come into this debate with an absolute. You know, I actually looked. I watched the DVD, and then I've listened to Jim and his other radio appearances. I've listened to what he has said today, and then I looked at this, did some my own research. I have quite a large library myself, and Deanna, you're aware I do a lot of nosing around in original sources, and my research has told me that, as salacious and sexy as it may sound for some to infer that Hitler may have a little bit of Jew blood in him, it's just not, the facts don't bear it out. To summarize my position further, one, Hitler's lineage was never secret or hidden. He was very protective of his family members, quite the contrary to a statement I saw in one article that he shunned and pushed away his relatives. He had tremendous relationships with his sisters, tremendous relationships, took care of them, made provisions for them in his final arrangements and such. So that's another story that's completely inaccurate. But I do not believe that there's any substantial evidence to substantiate a claim that Hitler wasn't anything more than an Austrian, and the grandchild of a grandmother who had engaged in a illegitimate relation. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And if he was embarrassed about anything, as proper as he was, that probably my interpretation, his conversation in table talk and reading the memoirs, which I have as many of them that are possible to get, the memoirs of those that were close to them that wrote about him, and if anything that bothered him, it wasn't the possibility of being Jewish, because I think he knew as well as everybody else that he wasn't. I think if anything in his family bothered him, it was the fact, that there was this trace of illegitimacy back in the family line. And I know families to this day that would be horrifying to find out that a great grandparent or grandparent had some sort of illegitimacy by birth. But I don't believe there's anything to show that he was nothing more than an Austrian by blood and by birth. And a German, and a subsequent, in a German.
Oh, and you're saying that his grandmother had an illegitimate affair with a family, with a distant relative. Is that what you're saying?
I think she had. I think she had. She had relations outside of marriage. There's no doubt about that. And I think the father, Hitler's father's father, was eventually identified.
As who? Her great uncle? Or I'm not clear who you're saying that she had the affair with.
Hitler. I'm having a coughing spell. Hitler. I don't believe there was any. I go a step further if you'd like. There's no records indicate that she was a maid for the Rothschilds either, because in Austria, Austria-Hungary, Austro-Hungarian Empire. And the German Empire at the time, one had to register where they were and what they did. And there's just you can actually find all of her records. You can find Hitler's grandmother's records, where she was, when she was in Lynn, where she was at any given time. And those records were used in 1937 and then subsequent investigation. And no one, by the way, this is important to note, lineage documentation that was done and is in Leipzig to this day has never ever been disputed or proven false. No one's ever challenged it and says, well, that's wrong.
I'm still not clear who you're saying that Hitler's grandmother had the affair with. It was some in-law that she had the affair with? the Heidlers or something?
She had a child. What I'm saying, she had a child out of wedlock. No doubt about it. There was a question as to which Heidler was the father.
Okay, and that's the dispute. Now, is the Jetsinger the man that did
and
this
that,
answer?
And that dispute was eventually resolved.
Okay, and resolved how? I'm not trying to trap you. I'm just trying to understand your position.
It was never a doubt. Well, it was resolved both. If you do basic genealogy, you can narrow it down. First of all, Heidler himself finally declared himself as the father, but you can also go back and backtrack using the records. Some of those records you can access in the Mormon genealogy library in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's amazing. They have Heidler stuff there, by the way. But beyond that, you can go back and just track where she was, when she was there, and then cross-reference the alleged or potential fathers of Alois.
Okay, now I've never heard of this, that her records were still extant and all that type of thing. But of course, there's a tremendous motive.
Her records are available.
Please. I'm not hearing you very well some of the time, and that's why I'm asking several times maybe what you're saying.
No problem.
Well, I didn't get the last thing you said, but the point is that
gentlemen, two people cannot speak at the same time when you're using Skype. So when one person speaks, then it cancels out the other person. So you have to take turns speaking.
Okay, and see, that's the problem. I can't hear when – I'm not trying to interrupt. I'm on a landline, of course.
Sure.
I just don't know – you know, I'm just not hearing everything that is being said, I don't think. But I still am not clear on who Rodney is saying the father of Heidler's father is. I take it's one of somebody named Heidler, and it's somehow an in-law of Schnickelgruber's.
Is that true, Rodney?
Johann.
Okay, that's what you're saying. Now, there's a tremendous motive, though, to cover, mm-hmm. if Heidler was part Jewish, there's a tremendous motive to falsify the record. So just because there is some records we can find today, I would not concede that proves a thing either. Because, for instance, again, I'll stand corrected. Dollfuss was assassinated in 1934. I had, for some reason in my head, 1935. But the investigation that is talked about was done when Heidler rose to power in 1933. So now, Rodney, are you saying that you deny that there was an Austrian government investigation? Again, I'm just trying to find out for the listeners where we all stand on this. Are you saying there was this idea that Dollfuss did an investigation into Heidler's lineage is a fabricated story, never happened?
I'm not willing to say that it's fabricated, but I'm not willing to concede that there was such a document because there's no record of a document.
Okay, I accept your position as a reasonable position. However, the word of mouth that's come down is that it was destroyed, that the report, when Dollfuss was assassinated, the Nazis destroyed the report. So why is there even any talk of this if there wasn't any report? Why is there so many different places that mention this report, including the last of the Heidlers? I mean, why does it have a life like the Protocols of Elders of Zion? They're always saying, why does this thing have such a life? Well, it has a life because it whoever wrote it seemed to know what was happening. It was going to happen in the future. And why does this story of Heidler being Jewish and the Austrian government, why would you say that? Let's just take the Austrian government report. Why is that still being talked about today, 65 years later, if it's a fabrication? The Jews aren't pushing it. See, that's one thing in these former debates I've been told, the Jews are smearing it. The Jews absolutely are doing everything they can to cover up the idea that Heidler was Jewish. They do not want that. There's not one book you can cite where they're glorifying in it and saying, look, the Führer was Jewish. No, they always mention it nervously, skip over it, or they put out some absurd report like we all heard on the media a year ago. They said Heidler was part Jewish and part black. So they threw in that part black thing so everyone would disregard the part Jewish, in my opinion. But the Jews do not push this. So I'm just interested in why you think anybody, and I'm not the one who brought it up, I just saw it when I looked at the research, various books, why is anybody talking about this Austrian government report 75 years later, 67 years later?
Well, I'll answer that really briefly, Jim. First of all, I have never in any of the memoirs, and what's interesting is one of your own sources, actually, Hans Frank, never mentioned that report in his Nuremberg, and I've read his Nuremberg transcripts. I've read the psychiatrist reports in preparation for this discussion. Hans Frank never, when he was given his, I'm going to call them babblings, because he did crack, talking about, I went down there to search his lineage, and by the way, he never mentioned anything, and the Austrian government, Dollfuss, knew about it too, and when we did the Anschluss, we burned the records. There is nobody, there's no records, and a tremendous amount of records on the German side, and communiques and such survived the war. And I can find nothing that indicates that there, one, was a study, or that one that, you know, Dollfuss, say in 1933, Hitler becomes chancellor in January 30th of 33. Dollfuss is assassinated about a year and a half later. So there's only a year and a half. So I have a lot of questions. I hear about word of mouth, word of mouth. I haven't heard any names. I haven't heard anybody's name associated, whose names associated with these mouths, word of mouth. You know, who first said there was a document in the Austrian archives or an Austrian State Department, and when after the Anschluss, I'm assuming that's what you mean, after the Anschluss, the Germans destroyed it. Nobody corroborated that, and there's been a lot. There was a significant amount of revelations. I mean, you know, you would have heard, you know, somebody would have talked. And with some credibility by now. What I've heard is word of mouth, word of mouth, word of mouth. What I haven't heard is out of whose mouth did that first originate, so then we can either consider the source, examine the source, or discount it altogether.
And I will concede to you that's a fair point, because I cannot answer that at this moment. Now, let me ask you, though, who was pressuring Hans Frank at Nuremberg to say that Hitler was part Jewish, which he basically did? Who would be the forces that were pressuring him to say this way? And there was torture at Nuremberg, and I know all that, but who would be the group that's pressuring him to say this?
I'm not sure. You're presuming that I was saying he was being pressured to say that. If you were to go, you actually have to go and read the Nuremberg transcripts and read the, there's two of the psychiatrists that subsequently published a lot of their, I call them interviews, and they weren't. But it's a historic fact that a majority of, quote, the translators at Nuremberg and the subsequent trials were all Jewish.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I'm not going to concede that he was, pressured. But
Do you think he said it then?
I will say this, the soldiers often do this under pressure, under mental fatigue, under torture, particularly under torture. You babble off and you say anything. And if you look at Hans Frank, and what I'm encouraging you to do is you look at the interviews and the transcript and look at how Hans Frank conducted himself, and two cells down, or I don't know what cells they were assigned to, but you had Alfred Rosenberg, who actually was a member of the NSDAP before Hitler. He had a part; he was in the party right before, and Wilhelm Frick. All three of those, Frank, Frick, and Rosenberg, with Hitler, were close to him for years, going back to 1919. Look at the contrast of the three. And I'm not sure. And then when you actually look at what he said, it's easily discounted. I mean, he talks about, Hitler telling him about the stories his grandmother told him when it was impossible. It was absolutely impossible.
Gotcha. But who would be pressuring him to, I mean, when you're under torture, they're trying to get you to say something. I just don't see, if the Jews were trying to get him to say this, they certainly didn't use it, because it takes, you have to be a Sherlock Holmes with a microscope to even find out that there was a pamphlet called In the Face of the Gallows. Now, one thing I might mention, Rodney and Deanna, is I wouldn't mind doing this, you know, if we got to do 8 hours of programs over a year, I'd rather do that than to cut the discussion short on one of these important points. I don't know how you two feel about it, but I would like to bring up two more quick things on this subject. You've mentioned a few times the person who's doing the ancestry investigation into Hitler in the 1930s, okay? Was that Jetzinger, J-E-T-Z-I-N-G-E-R? Was that somebody else? Because a man named Jetzinger.
It was Dr. Rudolf Kopfsteiner, and his documents are still available. It was, you know, it wasn't any, this, again, I was always disheveled, you know, flabbergasted when they talked about, oh, this was always a distinct secret. You can go into the archive. How I got followed it is I went to the actual Bundes archives, and it pointed me to a library in Leipzig.
Okay, now, there's a man named Jetzinger who did a investigation into Hitler's lineage in 1933, 34, 35. I have the Xerox of the study here somewhere, and I can fax it to you, get that to you. But he concludes that Hitler's lineage is somewhat murky. And also, as far as his grandfather and so forth, also in 1953... Douglas Reed, who I'm sure you're familiar with, the London Times reporter, who definitely had a pro-British bias, but a lot of us would have a pro-bias to some extent to the country we're from, but he was an honest reporter. Anybody that reads his books would see he was the real deal trying to report what he saw. He eventually got fired by the London Times or quit, I don't know which, because he was getting into all kinds of subjects regarding Jewry that they didn't want him to get into. But he went to Canada and interviewed Otto Strasser, who was a contender of Hitler's for head of the Nazi Party. And Strasser, in the book called The Prisoner of Ottawa, because Strasser was never let out of Ottawa to go back to Germany even after World War II. Which is interesting in itself, but he said in that book, in one paragraph, an obscure paragraph or two that is not promoted by anybody, he in 53, as someone who had contended with Hitler, said, there's three things that we have to look into regarding Adolf Hitler's background. One is his murky origins, meaning where he came from. Two is his working with the communists in Munich in 1919, and three is the disappearance of his body at the end of what happened to him at the end of the war, because the original reports when I was a kid in the 60s was that nothing was discovered of Hitler. Now that's another subject, but so I guess what I'm saying is I will concede to your point that this is not proven, and we've never said it was proven. We just said that the preponderance of the evidence points to it, not only in the what you're saying, that it's not murky, but a lot of other people were. So I am not familiar with this gentleman you just mentioned who did the study, and I'd very much like to look into that. But I would say that I don't believe that where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, people say, well, there's smoke, there's fire. Well, sometimes, most of the time, it's true, but it's not always true. So I wouldn't say that it's proven that, but I would say there is a ton of smoke. Not only what we've been talking about here, that it's being talked about 65 years later, and that the Jews are not promoting it. That's a critical point. The international Jewry, the greatest criminal element of all time, we would all agree, that is controlling much of our world and our media, they do not push this line that Hitler was part Jewish, even though there's all these little things that come up. And so, therefore, I would not concede that the investigation is dead, and I would even say that in light of the other facts we may talk about eventually, Hitler having the whole Mischlinger race where he made thousands and thousands of half-Jews honorary Aryans, he had so many other things, I would still say that the preponderance of the evidence points to the fact that Hitler was not only Jewish but probably a Rothschild, although again, I just want to be clear, I'm conceding that it is definitely not proven, and your position is just as legitimate as mine is on this. Some people may say more so, some people may say less so, but ours is, and I want to concede something else because I want to be fair here, Rodney, and that's what I appreciated about talking to you when we talked, you know, offline, and I hope we will again, is I think you're a very fair person, but I want to concede that our evidence on Hitler being Jewish is circumstantial evidence. It is circumstantial evidence at this point. There's nothing. So anyway, I don't know if that's enough. If you're happy with my formulation there, but if not, please correct me as you see it.
May I interject something?
Sure.
A professional genealogist after the war by the name of Alfred Konder, K-O-N-D-E-R, did Alfred Hitler, Adolf Hitler's family tree, The Untold Story of the Hitler Family, and that was published in 2001. And as I said, he did this, he's a professional genealogist.
And he said, what did he say?
He said that there's no evidence showing that Hitler was a Jewish person.
Okay, now Kondor, K-O-N-D-O-R?
D-E-R.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say, is the person Jewish? I'd have to know what the motive is coming from, you know, where this guy's coming from to begin with. He may just be a straight genealogist, but, you know, the comment, for instance, of Strasser to Reed in the book, neither Reed nor Strasser had any way to make it famous. It's just this little obscure book, and Strasser to say that, you know, I consider that of quite a bit of weight, that not only he but others at the time were puzzled at Hitler's background. I mean, I consider that to be of some weight. So I note that, and I will put that in my notes here, and that's something that I should look into also, the Kondor research, and I had not heard of it. So I thank you for mentioning it to me.
Sure.
Deanna?
Yes.
Real briefly, I'm going to post, and Jim, I'll send this to you. I'm actually going to post the 1937 document that was done. And it was done by the, I'm going to translate it here, the German Department of Persons and Families. It was their, you know, they were, family and family history was tremendously important during that period of time in Germany. But I'm gonna post it in a PDF on my website, because this is actually a document that was done and was posted and made and was available in the archives, and it's still available. And I'll post that on my website, and I'll email it to both of you. But real briefly, one other final real brief comment. There's another this story is often told to corroborate that Hitler was trying to cover up his history, that he had one of his old family villages completely eradicated from the face of the earth, including the church and graveyard, to hide his grandparents' grave. Well, it's just not accurate. That's the village of Dolstersheim on the Austrian-Bohemian border. That village is still there. It was actually targeted. It was identified by the Wehrmacht after the Anschluss in 1938 to be made into a base and testing ground, but it was not demolished. In fact, the church and the cemetery is still there. It's being cared for, and it was basically reopened, and they hold services there, but the graveyard is still there. I'm going to post a photograph on my website. And what's interesting is that is not the town where Maria Schicklgruber gave birth. She actually gave birth in a little hamlet community a few miles away by the name of Strongs. But
so you're saying that the sources that say that the Nazis marched in and made the graveyard where Hitler was, I thought it was Bernau in the end, but that is false, that they didn't make anything around his birthplace into a training ground.
Hitler's birthplace?
Yeah.
Hitler was born at Braunau am Inn on the German – that's different than what we're talking about, the graveyard.
Okay.
And then we're talking about two different regions entirely, and this is –
okay, I mean to be referencing the graveyard.
Dolersheim is over on the Bohemian-Austrian border. It was sparsely populated. The ground wasn't fertile, and you can actually to this day – pull up the site, what we would call, you know, I think the citing recommendation reports for the development of that military base. In fact, after the war, when Austria was again taken away from Germany and made Austria, the Soviets based there for a short period of time, and then when they withdrew from eastern Austria, it reverted back to the new Austrian armed forces, and it was used as an Austrian military base up until the early 1990s, and to this day is still referred to and is cordoned off as a forbidden zone. Portions of it are. It was only in the last few years that people were allowed to actually go back and kind of renovate the church and such. But the graveyard is there. Some of the old buildings were there. It wasn't, you know, what has been represented on these internet where, you know, Hitler ordered the Wehrmacht to go in and level and completely eradicate this village from the face of the earth and, you know, to hide a graveyard, because the graveyard's there. They didn't do that. They actually evacuated the handful of residents because it was sparsely populated. It was up on the Bohemian border, and the Germans were rightfully so, were concerned about Czechoslovakia because of geography. But it's a fanciful claim that there was somehow this was part of a cover-up, because if it was a cover-up, well, it certainly didn't cover up the graveyard, because it's there, the church is still there, and all the monuments were there, and there was a military value to it because the Soviets used it, and then after the war, the Austrian military used it for another 45 years.
Okay, now, I've never said that he demolished the whole thing. What the sources I saw, and they were not just off the internet, said that when the Germans went into Austria, that the relevant graveyards, not his birthplace, which is what I'm meaning to reference, the relevant graveyards where his ancestors were buried were turned into marching grounds and battlegrounds. You're saying that is not true?
No, what I'm saying is what we would call a town or a hamlet, where his grandmother registered the birth, which was a community of a little hamlet of Dolchersheim, that was remade into a military district. They did destroy some buildings, but the church and cemetery is still there. The records. Now let me go a step further. The records of who is buried where were and are still preserved, because those were reserved by the church.
Okay,
and
now
you can still, in fact, this little community, they claim it has a population of between 50 and 80. It actually even has a website. You can actually go on that website, provided you're a German speaker, and you can actually access the records.
Okay, but the part of the area was turned into marching grounds, though. You're saying the
wasn't
thing
marching was, ground. Military district. They trained there, but it was also there too. So there would be a southern military base to the south of Czechoslovakia.
Okay. So what if the birth records are still preserved by that church? What does Hitler's birth record say? If the mother registered the birth there, or are they not just still there? Those papers.
Well, Hitler's birth wouldn't be registered there. His was registered in Braunau am Inn over on the German border.
Oh, okay. I thought you said that his mother had registered the papers there.
His grandmother, I think. Is
I mean, grandmother.
No,
I keep saying.
No. Hitler's father's mother. I may have said that, and I'll stand corrected. Hitler's father's mother would have traveled there from Strones to register the birth of Alois. But the birth records when the city, we're only talking about the community never had more than 100 people, was relocated to other surrounding villages when it was made into a military base, and those records are still available. Matter of fact, this little community, Dolchersheim, has its own website, and you can access the records, and it tells you where to go get the Dolchersheim records going back before the First War.
Okay, so Alois, I misspoke myself, so sorry. Alois, what does his birth record say, if that's where his mother registered it?
Where she would have registered. Those would have been moved in 1938.
Moved by who to where?
Those would have been moved. I don't know where what provisional city they would have moved the Dolchersheim records to, but everything got centralized in Vienna, I believe,
at some period of time.
And I can't tell you that. I didn't go that far.
Well, this is why, though, I believe that the father on his, well, of course, Hans Frank said that the father seemed to be left blank there. But, okay.
What I've seen on the internet was the destruction of the cemetery to hide his grandmother's grave. Well, the cemetery's there, and then the records were preserved by the church. So you had, what I'm saying is, there, first of all, the city wasn't razed and destroyed. Some of the buildings are still there, including this church and the cemetery. The records were preserved both by the church and by the central administration. One thing Germans are good at, and that's preserving records.
You think that if we visited there today, we would see Hitler's grandmother's grave there?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do in the next week or so. I'm actually going to spend some time on that little community's site, and I'm actually going to pull up what we would call the inventory of the graveyard and see if I can find who I can find in there that matches the genealogy report that was done in 1937.
Okay, Michael Collins Piper, the famous author, who I've called the best political author of my generation. He's a little bit younger than I am. I'm 59. He might be 54 or so. But he said he's going to do a book. He's working on a book on the ancestry of Hitler. And of course, his position is that Hitler was not Jewish. So all of this type of thing is good to. Again, I've told you off air. I'm not trying to play gotcha. Oh, I won this debating point, or you won that one. We're just trying to get at the truth here, and I'm interested in all this stuff. I'm also interested on where is all this smoke of Nazism and Hitler and Judaism coming from, or Jewishness coming from, because certainly one place is not coming from is the Jews themselves, the powerful Jews themselves. They are not
promoting.
Well,
some of it is.
Please?
Some of it is.
Such as, I'd like to hear one example of a prominent Jewish person or book promoting that Hitler was part Jewish.
Well, I believe that there are some researchers, Berkness for one.
He agrees with my thesis, though. He agrees with my thesis. He did that interview with me in 2000 and 2007.
Right. And
so,
he
is one-fourth Jewish, but he agrees completely with that the Nazism and Zionism were two sides of the same game. So I will agree with you on him, but he is despised and kept. He's not a prominent establishment Jew. They keep him off of the radio show. You know, I'm not talking about your radio show, but they keep him off of Sean Hannity, and Bjerknes gets no publicity whatsoever. So I'm talking about a prominent established Jewish person like Charles Krauthammer.
I don't even think that they talk about Hitler.
No, they don't. They don't. But I'm just saying, any prominent historian, any prominent Jewish writer, there's none of them when they have to mention this, which some of them do in their books because they want to cover that it had been talked about back then, they skip very nervously over it and say, that's not true, and they move on to the next thing. They don't say, in other words, what I'm saying is the world Zionist establishment is absolutely opposed to people getting the idea that Hitler was part Jewish. So wherever it's coming from, they're not promoting it. That's all I'm saying. The establishment Jewish media is not promoting that. Do you agree with that, Rodney, what I just said, or not?
Well, I've never paid much attention to it because I just never believed that it was credible. I do know that Jews like whispering campaigns to divide and conquer their enemies. And this would be a great way to basically divide and conquer what the Jews would foresee as the last remnants of National Socialism, is that they could start a little whispering campaign based on some circumstantial examples that, you know, there might be a little Jew blood in Adolf, and so it might cause the movement to fracture and dissipate and such. So,
well, they
do they talk about it on on the 6 o'clock news? No. Why would they do that when the internet for those purposes is a far better weapon?
Well, I would agree with you that they like whispering campaigns and to divide and conquer, absolutely. But our position is not that Hitler would have maybe 1/64th Jew blood. We're saying we're actually saying it's 1/4 to 1/2 because the Poles family, his mother, is not completely known either, and anyone can see a picture of her on the internet, and she is a very magnetic-eyed person, which is not impossible, but it's unusual. It doesn't. I'm not saying that proves anything, but we're saying that he had enough Jewish blood in him that he got tremendous funding from the background forces, which may be the Jewish sources like the Russia, which may be a good point to go into the next subject, if you wish. But because I think we've at least as far as I can go tonight, we've covered the is Hitler part Jewish subject, I think. So do you want to go on to the next subject?
Yes.
In fact, sure. If you want to do this, I'm glad to do this again for 2 hours at a time because I do think that
I'm fine with that. Actually, I'm enjoying the conversation. I'm happy with doing 2 hours tonight and then 2 hours later we can get together based on if Deanna is willing to do it. You know, one of her specials.
Absolutely.
Is being very insightful to the listeners.
Yeah, and I would say that you've both brought up some sources here, which I will look into. I don't know if you've heard of the Jetzinger study back in the mid-30s on Hitler, but these are all need to be taken into account, no question about it. I mean, I'm not for squelching any sources. I just think they have to be looked at and then judged, and hopefully more information will come out as time goes on. But people have to be able to, I mean, I myself, my mind works on delayed reaction. So I'm not above changing my mind on something or beneath it or whatever, but I do not always, you know, I generally will take some time to consider before I make any kind of a change. And then I'll give a coherent reason for the change, you know?
Okay.
Well, we want to take up we basically have, I would say, 2 hours, Deanna. What, we have about 35, 40 minutes left?
Right, 35 minutes. and we're not going to finish this subject in 2 hours, definitely.
No, and again,
I think we can start the funding issue because the money thing, really, I think it's fascinating. I think there's a lot of misconceptions there. I think Jim, if you don't mind starting your premise about the funding issue, and then I
sure.
can go from there because I want to make sure I encapsulate all of your points correctly.
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to give a quick summary here, and then you can respond to it. And, you know, we could easily have said, let's, you know, like you had originally said, Deanna, let's go 5 minutes and 5 minutes. However, I think, you know, we've had a number of debates like that. As long as I hope the listeners have as much patience to listen to this as we do to talk about it, but I think this is much more useful than what we just did here on this subject.
Oh, I do too. It allows
I think it allows more to get out, and then people can be listening and saying, you know, and I would imagine, you know, if someone is came in here with a preconceived notion on one side or the other, certainly if they came in, and that's, I'm not saying that negatively, but if they came in as pro-Hitler, you know, kind of a Hitler apologist, you might say, one way to say it, I'm not trying to be derogatory with that, I would imagine they would think that Rodney has made significant points that would corroborate his position, and I've been unable to prove them wrong. On the other hand, people that know all of our research are probably thinking, yeah, but there still is a bunch of stuff here that doesn't make sense, like how many times it comes up even back then that Hitler was Jewish. And then on the third hand, a new person, I don't know what they would think. I'd be interested if there was any people new to the subject listening to this, what their interest would be at this point. So let me summarize real quickly on the funding, and then I don't think there's any question that the book by Anthony Sutton, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler,
documents that many firms, which would be shocking to Americans. We all know that there's a world of shadow government that goes on that the average person doesn't know about. But the idea that any American firms were giving Hitler funding and help up the line would be shocking to most Americans with what they've been told through the mass media. And certainly, again, the Jewish World Network does not play up that Hitler got any help from the West. The landing of IBM in Germany in March 1933, to help Hitler catalog the Jewish people in Germany on IBM cards, Thomas Watson going back and forth repeatedly, getting awards from Hitler, the New York Times never protesting. Now, this isn't exactly funding, but this is what makes people think...
That is another subject, and I...
But it is help. It is material help. I'm just saying I don't think anybody can question that where there's a lot of American firms giving material help to the Nazis and New York Times not protesting. So this indicates something more is going on here. Now, moving on from Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, because he does not mention Jewish or not Jewish in that book. He's just talking firms, okay?
And he doesn't really say that the firms gave Hitler any money. I mean, you have multinational firms right now that have absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the government, and those firms don't necessarily give the leadership in a country any money at all. You just have owners who happen to be in this country who had affiliates in Germany.
So you're saying in Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, he's not talking about Hitler getting material help from IG Farben and companies like that?
Exactly. He doesn't say that, really.
Okay, well, I have to look at that again. But he says in the book, he mentions the controversial book, again, which was quickly squelched and withdrawn from circulation, called Hitler's Secret Backers, and I want to mention that. But before I mention that, again, I want to go back to Otto Strasser in the book The Prisoner of Otto with Douglas Reed, 1953, and he says in there, we were all contending for, you know, there was a number of us contending for leadership of the Nazi Party in Germany, and he said, one day we looked up and Hitler had unlimited money. Now, this is, you know, I think a fairly credible testimony, again, from someone who was contending with Hitler, and Hitler then put out contracts on these people like Strasser. Strasser had to flee the country, and that's how he ended up in Canada. I certainly know what it is to look up and see that my opponents have unlimited money. I've run for office, and I know what that's like.
Keep in mind that those two were competitors, and
yes.
That Douglas Reed, although Douglas Reed has done some marvelous work, with the controversy of Zion and whatnot, I disagree wholeheartedly with his book, The Prisoner of Ottawa.
You think he lied?
Douglas Reed, I believe, was an establishment historian, but I'm just
he got fired, Deanna, he got fired by the London Times. They parted ways with him because he was too outspoken on the Jews.
Well, but he was too outspoken on the Jews, but that doesn't mean that what he said about Otto Strasser was correct. I view him as the same as I would Jim Morris, but I'm just the host here, so I want to kind of back out.
Well, I got to put my opinion on that. Douglas Reed was the most prominent anti-establishment historian of the 30s and 40s in the English-speaking world. I mean, everything he wrote was absolutely verboten he was squelched. His books weren't promoted. They only promoted by, you know, Christian book club and that type of thing. But I don't know what motive he would have to go to Hannah and just to write down the story of this Otto Strasser, unless both of them said, let's smear Hitler. That would be the only possible motive, which would be completely out of character with Douglas Reed's, the rest of his books. And anybody
can
read
it. Well, he was British.
Well, so is David Irving.
Like I say. Okay, I'm just the host. I mean, with regard to David Irving.
You're saying David Irving is an establishment historian?
I
mean, I know he's maybe weakening on a few points.
He's weakening on a lot of points.
But that isn't that. But his he was kicked out of all the major. He had to run his own books around in England. But let me get back to what Strasser said. He said that we looked up and he had unlimited money. Now, guess who else says that Hitler had unlimited money? And that would be James Poole in his book, Who Financed Hitler? Now, I know he makes, his main point is that this was all done by $25 checks from German businessmen, which no organization in history has been funded that way that I'm aware of that has a lot of money. Most of it, you always have the big donors who make up 20 to 50% of the money. But Poole says that Hitler, the Nazis had unlimited money, and again, he doesn't use the word unlimited, but he said they had everything in 1933. They had banners everywhere, they had planes, they had whatever they needed, they had, kind of like Bill Clinton did when he ran, or George Bush, or Barack Obama. And so he doesn't say that this came from the Rothschilds or the Warburgs, but he says some of it. But he does say that they had all the money they needed, and he tells that in conjunction with the story of Hitler landing somewhere. Now, Sutton mentions this book, Hitler's Secret Backers, which again is quickly destroyed, pulped, rushed off the market. I'd like to know who had the motive, you know, at that point to squelch this book except the Jews. It was published in Holland, and he says in that book, it says written by somebody wrote under the pseudonym of Sidney Warburg, and what survives of it, again, since it's destroyed, we can't say for sure what was in it, is that Hitler was funded in 1929, was given the equivalent of $30 million or whatever in today's money from the Rothschilds and the Warburgs, through the Warburgs. The two other sources that is where that is mentioned is the book called Red Symphony, which is allegedly the transcript done by a Polish doctor of an interview of Stalin's man Kuzma of Christian Rakowski, who was a big Zionist, who was a big communist, and I guess Zionist Jew as well. And Red Symphony was the name eventually put on the book that is allegedly the interview that was done on January 25th, 1938, when Rakowski was fighting for his life. Okay. He mentions in that book, in the book Red Symphony, and the Dr. Riznowski, the one who told me a lot of the stuff, he says the proof of that book is more in what is revealed in it, that it reveals things that only insiders could know. Somebody could say, did the Polish doctor really spirit it out during when the Nazis attacked Russia and he got out of his prison and he spirited it out and gave it to a soldier who gave it to this publisher in Spain. That's the story of how it got published eventually as Red Symphony. But it isn't that story. You could say, that sounds pretty far-fetched, or maybe it happened, but it's what's in the Red Symphony that talks about the period that reveals stuff that only insiders can know and didn't appear anywhere else. But Rakowski says in there that in 1929, the Warburgs gave Hitler this tremendous amount of money. Another source that this is mentioned in is one, you know, I say the historians can't get everything. Another source is Van Papen, who was one of Hitler's advisors. I think he was one of his only Catholic insiders, his only Catholic insider. Van Papen and his memoirs or diary memoirs published in 1954. Says that the best way, the source that best told how the Nazis were funded to power was the book Hitler's Secret Backers. That's quoted in Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. So with that, I'll turn it over to Rodney. But there's the sources where that comes from, and it seems to fit what happened, that Hitler was definitely became undisputed master of the Nazi Party after 1929, and had seemingly what most of us would call unlimited money.
Okay. You covered a lot of stuff there, and what I want to I want to bring up Strasser first.
Okay.
And I think the reason why I want to bring him up is when we talk about sources and a source, and I know Strasser he would on paper be considered or might look like a good one because he was there. But as Deanna pointed out, I believe, when she was having her, you know, her interchange with you, he was a rival. And Strasser was gone in 34. In fact, he was gone before the Night of the Long Knives. He had more smarts than his brother, and he fled to Czechoslovakia and set up an organization in Czechoslovakia. And actually, you talked about putting hits out. Actually, Strasser tried to put hits out and tried to get assassinate Hitler a few times. So Strasser, you know, had an axe to grind, and he always, you know, had an axe to grind. And like I said earlier in the program, sources, you have to consider the source, and you know, some, in this case of Strasser, I count him up as being one of those ones that you have to take with a grain of salt. I'm sure that some of his statements and recollections were true, but he clearly was a political rival. He clearly wanted to be the leader of the NSDAP. He, you know, he had this idea, him and his brother, this some sort of grand way where they would both run the party, and it didn't work out very well for them all. The only person that I give Strasser credit for was Goebbels, because Goebbels was originally a protege of the Strassers until he saw, you know, he saw the light. And a lot of people don't fully understand that Goebbels was originally in Strasser's camp. There was two wings within the party. So, you know, I want to stress that when we come to sources and base an entire position or a substantial amount of our positions on one source, then I think we have a duty to really examine that source and what agendas and agendas that source may have.
Absolutely.
Strasser was not a happy man after he left Germany. Okay, he tried to kill Hitler after Hitler was actually the chancellor, head of state. He lived in Czechoslovakia for a while. He ended up in Canada. He didn't ever feel he was treated well. He actually even tried to get involved in German politics again post-war. It didn't work out well for him.
I'm sure
that he has had a lot to say. I mean, his statement about Hitler, and I believe he used the date 1929, had unlimited money. But that's you know, we all, in fact, Jim, you've run for office, I've run for office, we both lost, and I'm sure you've made the same statement that I had. My opponents outspent me. They had unlimited money. That is a cliche, but I will stipulate that the NSDAPs were successful in fundraising to an extent. But I will say that it was not disproportional to what was happening with them. And again, I'm one that I like to look at what was happening at the time. I like looking at documents. I like looking at chronology. If you look what happened with the NSDAP beginning in 1928 to 1932, and before Hitler was named chancellor in January of 33, the thing that made this all, you know, interesting is the NSDAP started winning. They started winning decisively. There was about 35 and sometimes 40 elections in the Weimar parties, political parties in the Weimar Republic. By 1932, the National Socialists had got up to about 40% of the vote. For a single party to obtain 40% of the vote when your ballot is full of about 30 parties, that's substantial. In 1928, they began this run. They started winning. They started increasing the margin over and over. Now, people like to fund a winner. Nobody gives money to a loser. Now, I'm creeping over now, Jim, into the circumstantial type of situation that I talked to you about in some of your sources earlier. But there is a direct correlation, though, when you go back and look at the electoral success of the NSDAP in 1928. Then there was another special election. I believe there was someone held in 1929. There was another election held in 1930. And then in 1932 was a big one where they received the majority. There was a reason why they had lots of banners. One, there's two reasons. One, they had politics then worked differently. They had different sources of revenue, number one. And I'm not going to say that they did not get money from the United States, because there was a tremendous German population in the United States. And but as far as getting money from Rothschilds and Warburgs and the Jews, you know, funding a false front, I think that's a little fanciful and a little far fetched, because what they were able to do in terms of revenue, in terms of funding, is commensurate with their electoral success. And they also, as far as manpower, there are writings from what used to be what you would consider former NSDAP opponents that, you know, entered the government, became NSDAP members. You go read I-50, because I'm not see that. I able to watch the interviews of people who are there, who lived through it, who are now deceased. And in those interviews, every once in a while, they'll do an interview with a pro-German or a neutral, and say, "Yeah, I lived through it. It wasn't all bad. It wasn't all good." Whatever. But I remember particularly an interview with a German female social worker. She was a social worker under Weimar, and then she held the same position during the Third Reich. And she talked about during elections how effective the NSDAP utilized its manpower, what we in American politics call the ground game. They effectively were able to do that. Now, the number you said earlier, they received a $30 million infusion all of a sudden. The funny thing is, money leaves a trail. And I've heard you make that statement before in some of your interviews. And they say, I've heard you say that Hitler received it. And what I wanted to clarify, because I looked at two different models, I wanted to see what your position was, that somebody had given Hitler personally $30 million to utilize, or given the National Socialist Party. Because Hitler's income, contrary to a lot of people's distortions, Hitler's income is well documented. In fact, Weimar had a very, very, very aggressive tax office, and they were always targeting Hitler. And you can go into the German archives to this day and pull up tax records and tax correspondence. And Hitler's sources of revenues as well was well documented. I couldn't find huge infusions in revenue, nor can you find any evidence that he lived a lifestyle outside of his means, i.e. a lifestyle that exceeded the amount of revenue that he paid tax on. And he did pay tax on, and he had running battles with the tax offices about what should count as revenue and what did not, what belonged to him personally and what did not, what was the parties, what was belonged to the NSDAP. And these correspondence is absolutely fascinating. It's a fascinating read to look at these original documents and see that, you know, he had much the same issues with that tax agency that many millions of Americans in the United States has with the IRS. So what I wanted to clarify is that your position, that Hitler received an infusion of unlimited money to use at his own disposal, because I cannot find any forensic evidence to show that he had all this amount of money personally, or the NSDAP, because I cannot find any, you know, the NSDAP's funding and activities. If you look from 1928, when they started really seriously winning elections, and what I call breaking out, basically the party, the NSDAP in 1928 broke out from the rest of the pack, the 30-plus political parties ballot. They really broke out, and when they did that, there was it does result in increased fundraising. No doubt. But there was also beyond. If I can just finish beyond. You know, just the dues. You know, there was the dues payers. There was the donations, but they had intricate operations, business operations as well. They were very, very smart, which, you know, which I think is fascinating, because it proves all of the distortions that they were just a bunch of, you know, of brutes and ignorant and ignorance, completely incorrect. They were very, very, it was a very intricate political party, and they never, during the whole course of Weimar, and Weimar was after them the entire time, that they were banned after the 1923 putsch, and then they were allowed to reorganize again shortly thereafter. They were always maintained financial and legal compliance with the regulations. They never ran afoul under Weimar.
Okay, now, if I could just save us some time, too. I have never said that the Nazis were not good at the ground game or that they weren't getting massive small donations. I've never said that. They obviously were. Obviously, they also were good at organizing or they wouldn't have gotten anywhere. I mean, we're not in a situation like we are today with Obama and George W. Bush where the polls tell us that everybody loves them and then the secret counts confirm the polls and, you know, at first you can't even, and when you know that a large part of the population despises them. So I have never said, and it's never been part of our position, that was part of what happened. Just so, you know, I'm not disagreeing with any of that. And Hitler, Rosmowski, Dr. Rosmowski, again, my mentor in this, said that Hitler turned out to be a lot better. The people that were at first behind him thought he could give a great speech, and that's all they expected out of him. They were a little bit taken aback when he had ability in other areas, you know, organizing and strategizing and stuff like that, okay? Of course, they would not give the money to Hitler directly. It would be a Swiss bank account, however they do the money now. I mean, and no, I don't say, I never said that my opponents in for Congress had unlimited money. I knew what they had. John Boehner had $7 million in the bank. But I would say that Clinton, Bush, W. Bush, and Obama had unlimited money, quote unquote, because when you're trying to organize, like I was working with Pat Buchanan or Ron Paul, they hardly have anything anywhere because they're getting real donations from real people. But Obama and Clinton had offices everywhere in every city. So that is what James Poole, who does not get into, I don't think he believed that there was any massive funding from Warburg or Rothschild. But he says that the Hitler's group had just about seemed like unlimited money. So it was one of these very well-funded things. But I'm not denying they got a lot of small donations or that they weren't good organizers, just so we're clear on that. But, of course, the background funding would be done through Swiss bank accounts and through banks that the Rothschilds or Warburgs controlled or their people. I mean, that's how they do it now. That's how there's money laundering of millions and tens of millions of dollars of drug money. So, again, I can tell from your, you know, you tend to read as I would if I believed in somebody. You tend to read favorable interpretations into everything, but with regard to Hitler and the Nazis and National Socialism. But I'm not coming at
hold
it from
on,
that point.
Jim.
Yeah.
Jim.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt you because you didn't interrupt me. But
no. Go ahead.
The note that I don't just read favorable. I actually read it all because I like to know. I like to be able to know what's being written, pro and con. And if something's con is being written, I want to be able to debunk it or to investigate it. And if something new comes out that is actually accurate, I like to be able to make sure that it actually is accurate. We learn something new every day. I mean, there is hundreds of millions of archival documents that are still locked up from that period of time that, you know, probably won't be released during my lifetime. So I got a little note in the bottle for my kids to make sure they go down there and read those documents. But beyond that, I always want to clear. I'm not a Kool-Aid drinker by any means.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that there weren't, you know, mistakes and errors made. But when it comes to the politics, and I'm going to take this just one step further real quick. The dynamics of Weimar at that time, and I've done shows in Vienna on them. It does not surprise me that the National Socialists were able to be as successful as they are, and I've not been able to find any huge infusions of lurid or secretive cash. And for Strasser to have made a statement, all of a sudden Hitler had a limited amount of money. Well, at what point did he, you know, make this statement? And to me, a statement, you know, was Strasser concerned about that? You know, why was Strasser concerned about that? Because the statement's not quantified. And if Strasser was as much of an insider at the time, this money, which I think he says 1929, as he let himself agree, he would have known. Because he was actively trying to unseat Hitler as head of the party. So if there was that much money that came into the party coffers or in the disposal of the party, Strasser ran the party in northern Germany, essentially. Strasser ran the entire NSDAP in northern Germany. It's essentially what the Strassers did. They were in charge of the northern part of the party, and he would have known where that much money originated from. Especially, it came in a single lump sum.
Okay, now hold on.
At one point after the 1928 election, probably after the 1930 election, what we would call the German nationalists or the traditional conservatives, they began writing sizable checks and supporting the National Socialists because they had broken out.
Okay, and I hear you, and I didn't mean to. The way I said that sounded like it could have been an insult to your investigative integrity, and I didn't mean it that way, because I, as far as I can tell, you are conducting yourself in the highest way as far as looking into these things. So, let me give you that compliment, make that clear that that's my position. What I meant to say was, though, is that in this particular case, I wonder if you're considering the possibility of my position. And that would be, of course, the Rothschilds and Warburgs would not give it into the party coffers where Strasser could get his hands on it. It would be secret deals through secret bank accounts, as is done today, as we know is done today
I was going to conclude final thoughts on this particular subject is the fact that the NSDAP, particularly at that time, was not, even after 1932, was not awash with money. Actually, they had scaled back a whole significant number of internal party programs and projects because the elections, and if you look at some of the memoirs and writings of some of the party officials who happened to have been lucky enough to survive, there was some worry within the NSDAP after the 32 election. Because while they had been tremendously successful in that election, these elections every year or every year and a half were tremendously expensive. And one of the famous quotes, and it escapes me now, I think it was Dr. Goebbels made the statement, "My God, we've got to get in power soon, or we're gonna win ourselves to death financially and otherwise." It was costing them. They had actually, all of the financial resources they were getting from their dues, from the various enterprises they had engaged in, they were pushing up, to run in these elections. And so there was a genuine, they weren't, contrary to, the statement that all of a sudden they were just awash with money. Actually, the elections had taken a financial toll on the NSDAP, and the Social Democrats actually had more money, financial resources at their disposal to run in elections than the NSDAP.
Who had more money?
The Social Democrats.
I'll confirm that source, but I believe it was Dr. Goebbels in late 1932 made the comment that if they didn't obtain power soon, they were going to win themselves to death financially and otherwise, because these elections were taking a toll, having to run every year, a year and a half. They were constantly in election mode.
Well, okay, but secret money would be kept in secret bank accounts until it's needed. The party faithful wouldn't be told about it in any scenario of any time period, because the leaders would want the party faithful to continue to sacrifice, although I don't doubt that these elections were tremendous drains on everybody, as elections still are. Now, we're getting close to
I understand.
Go ahead.
No, I understand what you're saying, but it's important to note, if they were awash with money and if there was a secret bank account, then your theory would be that there wouldn't be these concerns, they wouldn't have unpaid bills, and they wouldn't have some of the financial concerns that they did in 1932 and early 1933, because the secret slush fund that allegedly Hitler would have, he could just reach in his pocket and basically balance correct the balance sheet. That wasn't happening.
Yeah, but
and what's interesting is The NSDAP had only one treasurer in its history. Franz Xaver Schwarz was his name. He was a treasurer from about 1919-1920 to the end of the war.
Okay, well, that you're assuming then that there's no, that Hitler's being totally above board with everybody, that there's no secret set of money or secret set of books. In other words, they're not going to tell publicly that they have a slush fund. Assuming for a minute any group that has one is not going to say that publicly. They're just going to call on it to prevent collapse. So now we're getting near 10.
Where did that go next?
Please? You're breaking up badly. That's why I keep having to ask. What was your last statement, Gerard?
Yeah, I just asked, my question is, where did the $30 million go? Because money leaves a trail. Where would the $30 million have gone?
Into the takeover of Germany. Into the electoral victories. I mean, it would have gone into all kinds of things to make, to produce the phenomena that that even Poole writes about, that the Nazis seemed to have money for everything in the 1933 race. I wouldn't have the secret bank slips or anything if they did exist. I mean,
go ahead, Rodney.
Jim, what I'm trying to avoid is the same type of sourcing that we had on the Austrian lineage report. You know, we heard that there was $30 million or there was unlimited amount of money. But we just can't. There's no evidence to back up that there was an unlimited amount of money, when in fact the evidence points the other way, that they were raising money, and they were raising money. Their fundraising was proportional to their electoral success, but their expenses were also excessive because they were constantly in election mode, and that there was discussion among the NSDAP leaders. And I believe that quote did come from Dr. Goebbels.
Okay.
And unless they actually obtained power rather soon, they were going to, there was going to be some problems. So that's where I'm coming from. That would be my position. Is I'm not seeing that, is on the sourcing of this $30 million unlimited, that the, it doesn't appear that the facts bear that source's position out.
Okay. Now, but I also have to distinguish between taking the statements of Nazi leaders as if they are gospel or cover the whole truth. You may, or someone else may, assume that. I do not assume that. So I, just because Goebbels said that doesn't mean to me that that's the whole picture. And
gentlemen, why don't we pick this up in the next discussion? Because we have, we've spent 2 hours, and I don't think that we're going to resolve this issue. But why don't we pick it up, in a week?
Do we have another minute or two, or are we out of time?
It's 9 o'clock straight up right now.
Okay, is that...
Why don't we just pick it up from the financial point in next week sometime, Deanna? When you can do it.
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
Okay, I'll have a question to start off the show
I will email both of you we'll set up another date, and we'll pick this up with the financial issues.
Okay, and then a bunch of other issues as well.
Okay. Yeah. We could go on like
very
this
good.
For months.
Let's just communicate by email and set up the next date, and then Jim can also put his things on there to start it off. But I think this went very well.
I do too.
Well, thank you both.
Okay.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. We'll talk to you later.
Very good. By email.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.